Rather tellingly, this notion that the party was the repository of consciousness was expressed symbolically in 1912, when the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks were both allowed to have legal party newspapers. The Bolsheviks named their paper Pravda, the truth, because this is what they believed the party represented. The Mensheviks, by contrast, named their paper Rabochaya Gazeta, namely the workers' paper, meant to suggest that they had greater faith in the active role of workers themselves. Now, Martov had a rather simple and blunt view of Lenin's ideas about consciousness and spontaneity. He said that a characteristic trait of Lenin's political culture, which influenced Bolshevism and eventually, he would later say, the communist state, was the fact that, as Martov put it, Lenin simply didn't trust people. In fact, Lenin felt nothing but contempt for people. Another explanation of these ideas focuses on the influence of populism on Lenin, something that a number of Marxists began to notice, and especially the influence of the terrorist People's Will Party, even though Lenin formally rejected terrorism as impractical. Like the People's Will terrorists, Lenin believed in the creative power of individuals to change history. Chernyshevsky called them new people. Lavrov called them critically thinking individuals, and Lenin called them professional revolutionaries. Same idea about the will and the power of individuals to change history, though now focused more on their rational power than on their moral conviction. And he expressed this really nicely in a famous line in What Is to Be Done. He said, "Give me a handful of revolutionaries, and I will overturn the whole of Russia." A remarkable and revealing statement, especially for a Marxist with all their theories about how history works, a remarkable statement of what might be called revolutionary hubris, revolutionary voluntarism. Now, this heritage of populism, in particular of people's will, of the terrorist branch of the populist movement, was also evident in another typical aspect of Leninism and of Bolshevik political culture as it evolved around Lenin's leadership. Lenin and the Bolsheviks liked to portray themselves as tough-minded and, in their term, hard. They were hard radicals. And this, by the way, had no small influence on their increasing popularity among Bolsheviks, among workers, especially during the hardships of World War I, a later story I'll be getting to. And this hardness of their style led to, among other things, a sort of romanticization of violence. Not terrorism, which wasn't seen as practical, but the readiness to use mass organized violence to make a revolution. Lenin liked to talk about the readiness of Bolsheviks to use what he called plebeian methods, fists and revolvers. He liked to say the proletariat was ready when the time came to roll out the guillotine. And in turn, he complained about these Mensheviks as being too soft. They lacked revolutionary spirit. They suffered from what he liked to call bourgeois spinelessness. By the way, this isn't really fair. During the revolution of 1905, for example, as we'll see later, Mensheviks organized armed groups and even went to prison for their willingness to help workers engage in insurrections. But what the Mensheviks didn't do is romanticize violence as part of the heroism of the revolutionary movement. Lenin did. And in fact, these differences led to a rather telling exchange between Bolsheviks and Mensheviks. When at one point Mensheviks began to criticize all Lenin's talk about the need for violence someday by calling him and the Bolsheviks Jacobins, after the French revolutionaries who ruled with the help of the guillotine in the name of the people in France, Lenin didn't seem to mind being called a Jacobin. "These idiots," he said, "these Girondins," referring to the more moderate branch of revolutionaries, "these Girondins don't even understand. They're paying us a very nice compliment." "What is Jacobinism," he said, "but, in his words, the struggle to achieve the end in view, with no shying away from drastic plebeian measures, a struggle without kid gloves, without tenderness." Later, after 1917, this willingness to use plebeian measures would lead to some rather brutal policies, as we'll see, especially when it was linked to the idea that the party, using the guillotine, using fists and revolvers and plebeian methods, was a repository of truth, indeed rational, scientific truth. But that's a later story. In the next lecture, before returning again to the history of the state amidst all this tumult, in particular to the history of the last two monarchs, we'll look at another set, quite a different alternative set of ideas and values in pre-revolutionary Russia, at another individual who had great influence over how his contemporaries viewed Russia and the world, at another vision of Russia's present and future, an influential vision. And this is that of the great writer, indeed many would call him Russia's greatest prophet, the writer Lev Tolstoy.